Hey, welcome to Real Estate Anonymous. Today's deal was one that I found fascinating for a number of reasons. Number one, it involved cocaine, Kurt Cobain, the roughest neighborhood in San Francisco, and Eric working his magic, showing us how to craft a story to make a property much more valuable than it would otherwise be. Here's the episode. Had a ton of fun, all four of us, and hope you like it as much as we like making it. Here you are.
Oh, we're back.
Yeah, wait, who's hosting this thing?
Which one is this?
I think we're going to do alternating house because this is going to be Eric's deal.
Go ahead, I'll shut up.
So, Eric, I think you're probably going to run point on this one today. We were chatting before we got online today, but we had to make a difficult decision to fire a property manager. There were just a number of things happening at the property that weren't working correctly. It's a tough decision, but as soon as we did it, a number of people on the staff came up to me and said, you know, thank you. She was not nice and wasn't teaching us. And so you always sort of wonder if it's the right decision. And kind of immediately after, I could tell from the vibe in the room that was the right decision. Tough thing to do, but we got it done.
I think the last time we spoke, you had a car crash into one of the buildings.
Yeah, different building. I always feel like affordable housing is sort of this intersection of like finance and insanity. And you just have the craziest tenants doing the most insane. And yeah, so one guy took the corner too hot. He was already in the parking lot and he drove inside of the building. And this is a building where 3 weeks ago, I had a tenant call and complain because he said that the food processor wasn't working. And he kept calling the office screaming about the food processor. So we send the maintenance guy. I think this guy's been putting raw chicken into the garbage disposal and thought that the garbage disposal was the food processor and was so mad at me that it wasn't processing the food. I said, my guy, that's not what's going on here. You don't have that. So yeah, similar property.
Exciting.
Yeah. 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 What's going on with you, man?
I think the Brett, what have you learned? What have you learned this week?
Well, I was hanging out with a lot of real estate brokers at a conference all week. And what I learned was a longtime mortgage broker didn't quite understand that 7 and 10 year loan, permanent loans were priced off of the 7 and 10 year treasury versus SOFR. I'd go with SOFR then if that makes you feel better. That's a higher rate today. I don't know why you're good with that one. I'm not the most detail-oriented person on this call, which I think everybody probably knows at this point, but I do know that's kind of the way the game works.
So long-term mortgage broker, this guy's, his job is placing debt for people, and I'd like to meet the clients who are looking at him and thinking, this guy, Jimmy the mortgage broker, this f***ing wizard's going to solve my problem for me. The guy who doesn't understand the difference between the 7 and 10 year and the SOFR curve.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure permanent lenders would be fine giving them SOFR if they could fix that index today. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, what do we know? Just real estate brokers.
Brett, I had a broker reach out to me about a deal actually in Girdley's hometown in San Antonio called the Park at Callahan. And the lenders have taken it back. And it's a horrible deal in a horrible part of town with no redeeming qualities whatsoever. And the lender said,
so you went and looked at it.
Yeah. So of course I went and looked at it because I'm like, wow, this place is going to be crazy. So the lender says to me, he goes, look, we have our loan balance is $15 million. That's our sale price. We'll give you 100% financing at SOFR plus 200 for 18 months. And I kind of put my hand on his shoulder and I said, Moses, that's the f***ing pitch I've ever heard. I couldn't be any less interested in that. All right, thank you. But no, I'm not interested in that. So I'm not terribly, I am surprised your mortgage broker didn't know the difference, but I don't know that it's that surprising.
Did you give him an opportunity to go to the corner and have a do-over when he came back to talk to you?
I did not. I just said, well, this has been really great. I appreciate you shaming me around.
Yeah. All of my people get with your people.
Yeah, I'd love to take you up. And it's just a number of debt funds out there right now. We're saying, oh, we're willing to sell our loans at par. I'm like, shit. Oh, you want your money back? That's an unbelievable concept. I had no idea. Great. We'd love to transact at par and bail you out. Eric, what's up in your world?
Okay. Well, I learned something not fully entertaining. It will lead us into our conversation today. But an old coot I know in the hotel business asked me if I knew about the Coke can valuation method on hotels. And I said, I do not. And he said, if you want a rule of thumb valuation on a hotel, see what they charge for a can of Coca-Cola in the in-room Coca-Cola if they've got a mini bar or if one's left out. Take that, multiply that number by $100,000 and multiply that number by the number of rooms in the hotel, and that'll give you a value for a hotel. So it's kind of fun to think about. If you think about these places that the mini bar Coke is $3 or $4, you got to call it a $400,000 room valuation. Sort of a fun way to think about it, which leads to today's discussion.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was going to be a story about doing Coke in a hotel.
Where does this end up? Well, it may well be. Hang on.
This is the worst story I've ever heard.
I don't know how much time we have on this podcast, but I feel like I could tell you a couple stories like that.
Yeah, right. Asking for a friend. We got a 3/4 acre redevelopment site in downtown San Francisco, right? That's about what this is.
Yeah, so I was looking this over last night. I guess the deal is it's a rather large assemblage in what they're saying is a decent market. And you got a 44-room hotel that the lease runs out September 30th of 25. I guess the pitch is sort of like covered land play while you're going for permits. It was at least mm-hmm. right. I'll let Eric sort of do the full rundown, but I think that's what we're talking about here.
One of the largest sites left on the north side of San Francisco. The site has 80-foot height limit. It can accommodate up to 377 units or up to 450 units with the state density bonus. 37,810 square foot residential development site in the heart of San Francisco's Civic Center neighborhood. The site is currently leased to the Phoenix Hotel, a 44-room hotel. The lease with the hotel operator expires in September 2025, providing investors with an income stream during the entitlement process of the opportunity to take over the operation of the hotel at the conclusion of the lease.
Oh, I know where located. This is. My friend lived across the street from here. There were prostitutes outside. This is a horrible neighborhood. Anyway, keep going.
Located
it probably hasn't gotten much better.
It's a horrible neighborhood. This is perfect. Keep going.
Located at Eddy and Larkin Street, the site offers excellent transit connectivity and direct access to abundant hotel, retail restaurants, nightlife, as evidenced by the site's walk ride score of 100 out of 99 and 94 respectively. Respective amenities include the Civic Center BART station, Muni Lines adjacent to the site, Civic Center Plaza, and the Billy Graham Civic Auditorium. It's, you know, covered land play, and I love it. This is in the heart of the Tenderloin, the seediest of seedy parts of San Francisco, one of the great American cities. This is the Phoenix Hotel. One interesting note about the Phoenix Hotel, Kurt Cobain, when he died, they found in his pocket stationery. Phoenix Hotel has been home to just about every rock and roller from David Bowie to...
I bet the Grateful Dead have spent some time here. Yeah, yeah. Close to the Bill Graham Auditorium.
So yep. These were the it's right around the corner from the Great American Music Hall.
The Folsom Street Theater, which is not as much theater as you think. These guys, I remember this. This is the Phoenix Hotel. The guys who were some of the very first hotel redevelopers would go find... It was called the Joie de Vivre Hotel Group.
Yes.
And they would go find seedy old motels like this and make them cool. And they were like one of the first ones to start to do that.
So this was Chip Conley's, I think, inaugural deal, and ran it as another name. But then the OG of that world, Liz Lambert, took it over. Liz Lambert of Bunkhouse Group redid the hotel. She's sort of the Janis Joplin of the hotel world. She did Hotel San Jose. If you haven't seen it, a fantastic documentary about buying. She was a lawyer, had no business being in real estate, buys this super seedy hotel on South Congress Avenue in Austin, and with the junkies and the derelict music guys, turned it into a super groovy hipster place that was really the catalyst for everything that's happened since on South Congress. And then she's been responsible for another 20 or 30 super cool places, including one in Marfa, El Cosmico, kind of a trailer park hotel glamping situation. Anyway, super talent. And since there's a whole nother chapter of her life of dealing with the folks that run Standard Hotel and sort of her exit from Bunkhouse. But anything that she's touched has been super successful. And this is just super interesting that this was one of her projects. Also has a restaurant on site, and there's some great stuff about the location. Debbie Harry was there, found there with JFK. Long list of stars, music people have been at the site. And, you know, it's sort of like the tenderloin of what do you want to bet on the tenderloin? And that's, you know, can you... Are you buying it at the best that it'll ever be? Or are you buying it at the worst it'll ever be? Are you buying it somewhere in between?
How does it get worse? Good deal? Just out of curiosity. Like, there's an open-air drug market like 3 blocks away. Like, how does it go? I mean,
I don't
understand.
I gotta right. Lean in. Yeah, Michael, that's a good question. Like, are you catching this? Are you getting a good deal on a piano and it's falling out the window? Or is this actually a thing you want? So what do you think of it, man? What would you do with it? Are you going to keep it in the Phoenix or are you going to read it out?
I think it's got a super cool history. It's in a really rough, tough part of town. The way that they describe it on their own website is kind of like, be careful when you stay here. So I think it's the kind of thing where if it's San Francisco, do you want to make a long-term bet against San Francisco? What would you value the thing at now? I think the idea of this is a redevelopment site. I can't imagine somebody either wanting to or financing redeveloping this as a high-density site that wasn't sort of, you know, municipally backed. But I think it does get interesting if you start looking at it just on the merits at kind of a baseline. It's worth something. And to me, they're getting about a $250 room rate. There's 44 rooms. If you said you could keep the thing half occupied and get to a 10% margin running a place like that at those rates, I'd make that bet, which probably gets you to like a baseline $200,000 a year kind of an NOI. What's that worth? In the tenderloin of San Francisco, probably a couple $1 million. And then you take a functioning restaurant. I'd be pretty comfortable be able to lease that place for, call it, $300,000 a year. So I think you're dealing with a baseline kind of, I'd be super comfortable at taking on a $500,000 kind of NOI out of this thing and owning a corner in San Francisco, albeit a rough part. And so then it comes down to, what do you want to pay for that? So I don't know. If you ask me, I think with knowing nothing about the gazillion of municipal regulations and everybody that's going to fight you because you're trying to do business in San Francisco, I think you could get your mind around paying $5 million for this thing.
I just have one quick question. Why did you run the map with a 10% operating margin versus the Coke can model? And I have a pretty good idea of why that is. It's because they don't have mini fridges in the rooms, Eric.
Well, it's a different Coke policy there. Yeah.
What's the conversion between a gram of Colombian powder and the room rate and the price per key? I'm sure there's some correlation.
Yeah, there's some heavy math there.
Subconsciously, Elliot just went with the price per key. I see that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you think about vacancy that I get? You got $300K and maybe NOI coming out of that restaurant. How long do you model vacancy on? Like, a restaurant goes under, restaurants are prone to going under. How long is that space vacant for? Is it 6 months to release it?
Yeah, I'm also flashing on. This was probably 15 years ago, looked at buying a super cool building in San Francisco, a 2-screen movie theater, kind of in the best part of San Francisco. The theater had been vacant for several years, one of those grand old 1920s high street kind of theaters with the big marquee sign. And we had a terrific luxury retailer to be named later interested in the space. We were going to preserve the building, leave the marquee, and sign a long-term lease with this person, and thought it was a fantastic financial opportunity. Then got it under contract and realized that there were 27 individual neighborhood groups that would have the ability to weigh in to change the use from theater to retail, no matter that it was functionally obsolescent to run as a theater. It couldn't run as a theater. And after about 3 days of seeing how much unbelievable headache was involved in trying to make this deal happen, we unfortunately bowed out of it. But that gave me sort of a taste of like the kind of what you have to do to be able to do business in San Francisco. And things can come out of nowhere. So I really can't imagine. You've got to be a complete insider to buy something like this, to modeling some sort of vacancy. I think it's more about, can you sell, can a restaurant in this location with this crazy patio and swimming pool and all that sell $3 million worth of food a year? And you can kind of do that in a pretty swell way. And so I would kind of just hang my hat on the idea that it's worth at least $300,000 a year kind of rent check.
Well, and for the audience, Eric, you might want to just maybe touch on, you know, vacant, unimproved restaurant space and then the cost to get it business ready, right? I mean, just in terms of the TIs, which are substantial from everything I understand.
Yeah, if you're building something swell these days, you can sort of figure on turnkey, kind of a $400 a square foot or more cost. And a lot of that is sort of unique to the, probably at least 70% of that is unique to the operator. You don't get much credit for it. So on any one of those turns, assuming the basic infrastructure and the basic layout is okay, somebody's coming up with $300 a foot at a minimum. And that might be you as the property owner, that might be the tenant, or it might be more than likely a mix of the two. So then it's kind of, what is the, if I'm underwriting this and I don't want to be in the business of putting more improvements into the tenderloin, what's kind of that minimum rent that I'd be comfortable in saying, hey, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Tenant, all these costs are on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And that's kind of goes back to where I could say, all right, I could say with a straight face to anybody, this is a $300,000 a year restaurant space. You do the work.
And then we're back to $5 million for the value. So we're off by 10 on the sales price. So we're close.
Just so
we're close.
We are close. So you're saying there's a chance.
Like 1 in 100?
Yeah.
No, like 1 in a million. Saying there's a chance. So I think that might be a good pivot to the way the deal's positioned. From the way I read it, is kind of a cover land play, as Elliot said. And maybe should we spend a little bit of time talking about the feasibility of that and why that doesn't work, which we kind of alluded to earlier.
You probably don't want to, or at least I don't want to own this and build it and go like spec apartments or condos. But if there's some value and you buy the deal, you kind of run the hotel, and in the background you're getting, it sounds like it's not entitled, you kind of partner up with a local guy who's connected, you get the entitlements, you get it sort of shovel ready, and maybe someone dumber than you comes along and likes that it's already ready to go. I wouldn't be the guy to build it. But Eric, would you spend time doing that, or is that juice not worth the squeeze?
Well, it seems to me that there's I love San Francisco, and I love the idea of having a corner there, even in the grittiest, funkiest part of town. Maybe the sickness in me is the sort of the grittiest part of town. But if you could get this, and there's no way that you could, but if you could get it at the kind of numbers that we're talking about, their value is not ridiculous if there was an ability to actually build something, you know, in a different universe, and the San Francisco got back on its feet and some sensibility came and you had it entitled and the capital markets improved. It's not out of control that a $15 million valuation could make sense. So to me, it's sort of like the idea, if you could get this for a couple of $1 million, that would be super entertaining. Run the hotel, make 10 or 15% on your money while you're hanging around. That's to where I think I'd be super excited.
It's worth it.
I'm sure the seller wouldn't be.
Let's say you did this. You build the thing. How much of the Phoenix are you keeping and or incorporating into the design of the new building? Because it's kind of a landmark hotel, for better or for worse. It's got some history. How many pieces are you hanging on to? Are you just like naming it something different, or are you trying to tie into what was there before?
I think because it's San Francisco, you've got to be super comfortable that you're running this thing as it exists forever. And there's still risk in that there could be some municipal change that you can't have a hotel, or that the hotel has to house people that are not paying you, or some crazy thing. But I think at a minimum, the bet is you've got to be comfortable that nothing ever changes about this.
No, I meant more like from a design.
But if you did tear it down.
Let's say you did get a permit. You were going to build a massive new building. That new building, how much of that new building incorporates the old building? Because you're pretty good at this kind of stuff at some of your space.
It would be super cool if you could keep the soul of the Phoenix Hotel there and incorporate it somehow. Keep the, I think, yes, stylistically, without being fakey or cheap, I think that could be something that created a personality for the building and made it, you know, actually, you know, more marketable.
Yeah.
Well, and so just thinking about it, if you were just to tear the whole building down at the expiration of the lease in September of next year, running a little bit of math here, assuming $4. So 80 feet, what, a 7-story building, and you got to park there too. So you have to have integrated parking in the building, which gets expensive, as we know. And so just assuming 900 square foot, average square footage at $4 a square foot. So it's $3,600 a month. And then an operator, an expense margin of 40%, you know, and solving to what you would want on a development yield today of, let's just say, a 6% development yield, which is the NOI divided by the net operating income divided by the total cost, that gets you to a whopping negative $24.3 million land basis. Plus you get to pay $15 million for the opportunity to spend, to lose $24 million. But I think that's kind of the way they're positioning it, right?
Yes. So talk about that. If this comes across Brett's desk, what would entice you to take the listing, and knowing what you know, how would you position it?
Yeah, so I'll give you SOFR plus 200 on construction terms. I mean, I'm not an expert on San Francisco. Like it a lot. Love the music scene there. The Bill Graham Auditorium is a iconic building from the music I like. Big Grateful Dead guy. But at the end of the day, this kind of goes down to so many development or redevelopment deals. At the end of the day, the math just doesn't work. And so again, for round numbers here, if the return on cost is 6% and we're assuming the cap rate 6%, there's no financial incentive for somebody to take on development risk today, because net-net, that's a break-even transaction for the developer while you're taking on a ton of risk.
The speaking of marketing, I did find on the hotel website, this is positioning. It's called Tender Hearts in the Tenderloin. The Tenderloin neighborhood is not for the faint of heart. It is, however, reserved for those with big hearts. People live on the streets in this neighborhood. It's hard to see, but there's something else to see, too. Incredible human compassion. People help each other here, and if you'd like to, you can help too. Ask the front desk about the Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation. Keep your wits about you and your eyes open. I'm always curious about that. When do you say you're dealing with a client? This is priced too.
Right.
When do you decide to put a price on something versus unpriced?
So I have not been doing this for 100 years or even 20 years, but we've never taken out a listing with a price that's attached to it. I think those deals tend to be more private client group deals. And the rationale behind that is if you tell somebody it's worth a dollar, they're not going to say, okay, fine, we'll pay you $1.50. And so what you're hoping for in the brokerage business is somebody that has conviction around a plan or a creative strategy that is going to help them get to the highest value. And one of the funny terms in brokerage is it only takes one. And so where you go out with listed or, you know, listed price, I think it proves to be an ultimate governor. And I don't think anyone's meeting pricing guidance today. So the difference between a listed price and pricing guidance would be, you know, for a brokerage firm that takes out a 300 unit apartment deal, they're going to guide buyers to a certain range. And unfortunately, no one's close to those ranges these days, as Elliot can attest, with some of the cool brokerage stories he's heard. But you know, I mean, that's why we've not done it before, is you wouldn't want to preclude somebody from quote unquote overpaying for the deal. Well, I think this, the seller said, I need $15 million or I'm not transacting, which is why a lot of deals that are marketed today are not trading, is I think brokers are doing a poor job managing sellers' expectations. Not a lot of transaction volume. So a lot of brokers aren't making any money today. And it's kind of like, all right, well, shoot, if this works, great. If not, you know, we're net in the same place because we don't have anything else to work on. But I think the listed sales price oftentimes is a directive of the seller. And again, I think brokers could do a much better job being real with sellers and saying, guys, like, this is a math exercise. This doesn't make any sense.
Neil Young lived here while recording Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's seminal album, Deja Vu. Now, I would, if I was brokering it, that'd be the first thing that I'd put on the
That's worth another $5 million. Forget all this boring. By itself.
Yeah, forget about all this boring development.
This thing's underpriced for Neil Young anecdotes.
Maybe the tagline of the marketing process, go back to another Neil Young song, would be "Don't be denied." You know,
how about this? How could we forget the time Debbie Harry and JFK Jr. were accidentally checked into the same room? Or the note on Phoenix stationery found in Kurt Cobain's pocket after death. See, that's how you sell one of these things.
Gotta find a music joke. Yeah.
That's right. That's
or
right.
Maybe they could add Courtney Love to the deal team to help articulate the story a little bit better.
But I do like you know, the great part about the boutique hotel business is when it works is fantastic. It's one of the few ways that you can influence values and properties and have some degree of control over outcomes. So I'm always fascinated with the people that do it well. Same thing to extent with the food and beverage component, having folks that can run those places can really transform property values and for everything around it. But, you know, I think all that to be said, that's all great and fun. Buying in the Tenderloin is not for the faint of the heart. And buying in San Francisco, really, you've got to be prepared for anything. And so unless you are, you know, a real insider, and unless you've got real juice with the neighborhoods, with the city, with the whole political infrastructure, these are the kind of deals that you're best off giving a wide berth or coming up with a price that's just so ridiculously cheap that you can roll with this thing kind of no matter what happens. So maybe, you know, maybe it's one of those deals where there is maybe there are a few local warlords that think they can get their mind around it and are happy to, you know, take this thing on at those kind of prices. I would bet that it doesn't trade at this number.
Right. And I think you touched on it just a minute ago and earlier too, Eric, is there's a lot of headlines around how California is dead or not going to be viable going forward, how San Francisco, we've all seen that national retailers pulling out of downtown San Francisco. But I mean, I'm a big believer that these gateway cities or top 10 cities in the United States are going to have their day again. So my take on this has to be a longer term hold. If the hotel works, great. And I think the longer term hold is just waiting until San Francisco has its day in the sun again. And I guess to go to the Deja Vu album again, you could teach your children that this is our house. Kind of thing.
I like it. See, that can go in the package.
See, it's all about crafting the story. This is a good one. I like this one.
Mr. Girdley, what's your take on the Phoenix Hotel? What's your price? We could do fireworks.
Yeah, but no, not in that city. Yeah, the only fireworks you're going to get involve Coke, not the one in the can. This smells just totally like something where you need to have a
customer. Yeah, I think it's some out of town guys.
Not for us, right? Randos in flyover America.
I do love the Squatters, which I imagine is a shield.
Though not the way Elliot does it after hearing about his day. I don't want to do that. Somewhere in the middle.
That would be some serious management chops required to run this place.